yeah, one day there's just the crib in the house that, you know, that we put there, and the drawers and some clothes and all that stuff. And then the next day, boom, there she is.
You're not having baby showers, you know, as a female, you're not seeing your body change and everybody going, how much longer? Oh, enjoy it while you can and keep sleeping, or, you know, what, all of that ramp up doesn't exist.
It's the Foster to Forever podcast. Happy stories of non-traditional families born through foster to adopt. I'm your host, Rachel Fulginetti. Hello and welcome to the podcast, Amy and Tiger. So happy to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Thank you.
So first, tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to foster to adopt and how many children you have and what that was all like.
Okay. So we met old and we're both living in Los Angeles at the time and madly in love and realized we wanted kids, but that at the end of the day, it didn't really matter to us how we got them biologically. And I'd had a lot of health issues when I was a younger woman. And so I was a little fearful, too, of carrying. And so we just kind of dove in and took PS MAP classes through LA County, which, you know, in hindsight is its own crazy story, of course. And
can you tell the listeners what that is if they don't know?
I'm so sorry. PS MAP is basically a required training, and ours was 6 weeks and 8 hour days. And we took it day long classes every Saturday that you're required to have before you can be a licensed foster parent. And so the process is very thorough. You do a background check, you have to do fingerprinting and all of that. And I think it just kind of weeds people out a little bit. Like, are you really even interested in this? Or was this just a passing fancy?
Right.
And so we did that. And we currently have an effervescently beautiful, vibrant 9-year-old, third grader, almost fourth grader as of 2 days from now. Mm-hmm. And we had a really traumatic process, but are super happy with the results.
How old was she when you began fostering her?
She was just over one.
Did you just decide like right away, like we're not going to have biological children, let's do foster to adopt? Or did you like kind of look at other options and then land on foster to adopt?
We briefly had done fertility treatment. As Amy said, we're kind of old.
Yeah. And what it came down to.
And then adoption, foster to adopt specifically was the only choice for us.
Yeah.
Both emotionally and I guess.
Fiscally.
Well,
fiscally,
that too.
But yeah.
I think I'll add a little to this. I was working at a time for a fabulous company, and there was a project manager who had adopted two children. Mm-hmm. And she did it through an agency. And because she was a project manager, she had literally this 4-inch binder that she's like, here, Amy. And it basically just outlined a whole bunch of paths and different processes and things they had to do through their process.
Wow.
And after looking at that, we were in a place where we were still doing fertility, but it wasn't to the point where it was getting super expensive.
Yeah.
But that would be the next step.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would we pay $30,000 for this when there's so many kids in the world? And it just aligned with our philosophical values.
Yes.
And that's why we went that route. And then why we went directly through LA County, I think...
We never considered it.
We wouldn't do it that same way now.
Uh-huh.
We have other friends. Yeah. We have other friends that adopted, but they at least went through a nonprofit agency or had a better guide,
right,
per se. And we were just really going independent.
Right. For listeners who might not be familiar, there's basically two ways you can do it, as Amy just said. So you can go directly through the county to get certified and move through that process,
or you can use a foster family agency. And what happens is, in a way, it creates more quote unquote work for you because you have double social workers, right? So you have visits from your foster family agency social worker and from the county. However, on the positive side, when you have an agency with you, they're really the only people that are in the equation for you. Like they're there to advocate for you and obviously the child. Whereas if you go straight through the county, you're really, there's nobody there really for you. Was that your experience?
For sure. We had gone through the PSMAP classes and we're basically in the foster system with directly through the county. And then we decided that maybe we should go through an agency. And we actually started the process with an agency when the county all of a sudden approached us with our first foster to adopt.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Okay.
We were like on this other track. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, well, let's go ahead and go.
Gotcha. Simply because you're blind and we didn't even know what was happening, you know,
right.
With the county at all.
And for sure. In terms of advocacy, through the county for foster families, there's nobody there that fits that job.
Right. Exactly.
In fact, I mean, the mission statement of DCFS is reunification with family.
Mm.
And that's not us, you know,
right.
Or that wasn't us during the process. And so from friends who did it the recommended way in hindsight that you did, Rachel, our friends that did it that same way have an added kind of level of blessing where they still have a resource now where they're almost like extended family.
Yes.
And we have some dear friends that adopted and have had, the birth mother has had two other children since the child they initially adopted.
Yes.
And they've been the first stop to see if they are interested in expanding their family. And they did once, but the second time they're just like, we're also old and we're at our capacity and we want to give the best for this life for this child. But they were able to work with another family in that same nonprofit. So they will still have that connection and that relationship over the years for the children, right?
That's amazing. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Question to you, if you do go through the county, if you've adopted a child and then it turns out that they have a biological child, another one, the birth mom, would you still be the first stop? Would they inquire to you?
We don't have our license anymore.
Uh-huh.
But we also had a really unique situation that I'm sure we're going to get to, but where Zarina has a stepbrother that was also in the system that was adopted by a biological family, or not adopted, Perfect. That was in the home of a biological family member, then she's still a licensed person as far as we know. And I would assume because of that, that would likely be the first stop, but we don't know.
So she was just a little over a year when you brought her home. What were those early days like for you? Because something that I haven't talked a whole lot about with people, but something that certainly was my experience is that it is the strangest thing to one day not have a baby and all of a sudden you have a baby. And it's really... Yeah. Anyway, I want to hear what your experience of that was.
Yeah. One day there's just the crib in the house that we put there and the drawers and some clothes and all that stuff. And then the next day, boom, there she is zipping through the house, at full steam, just almost like, dropped from heaven, but just kind of like, bing, she's there magically out of this kind of magic chaos that kind of and all of a sudden, bing, there she is.
Yeah,
it's a different kind of adjustment than when you've got 9 months on the run up to getting an infant.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Different school.
I'll expand on that too. We through the training, mentally you kind of know, what the path will be. You might get a call in the middle of the night,
right.
et cetera. But it you you're not having baby showers, you know, as a female, you're not seeing your body change and everybody going, how much longer? Oh, enjoy it while you can and keep sleeping or, you know, what all of that ramp up doesn't exist. And so it is, I literally remember after we picked up Serena, which was literally a 15-minute meeting, we're driving away and we made a comment to each other of like, oh my gosh, I feel like we just stole a child. Like, I mean, you just like all of a sudden there's this little bug in the back, you know, smiling away and just chatting and I mean, you know, gooing. And it was just very, very surreal.
Yeah, it really is. And thank you for bringing up, I just want to touch on that for a moment. Another thing we haven't talked about yet on this show is that, that feeling of otherness, right? Like, I remember being so just feeling really othered without them meaning to. But anytime I would be at a playground or I would be at like a birthday party or anything, and they're all talking about, oh, what was your birth like? What was your birth like? You know, all of the stuff that new moms talk about, that I couldn't participate in those conversations. And that definitely, like, I felt some grief around that, you know, and they'd be like, well, you know, you've experienced birth, so you can do anything, you know? And I was like, yeah, no, actually I haven't, but I still feel like, you know, anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge that.
And also, you know, we missed the first year of her
yes.
life, so that that kind of, you know, you know, and we, you know, honestly, we don't know a whole lot about other than what we were able to glean during the adoption process. And so you know, and so there's other, like, you know, all those sleepless nights, whatever, and we're like, hey, she kind of went to bed pretty easy, you know what I'm saying?
What is her ethnicity? Is it the same as yours, or is it different?
Okay. Yeah, she's Black.
So that also is another thing. I have, my son is African American, and so then there's also that other layer too of like people maybe not thinking that this is your child, or have you experienced any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
For sure.
Lady, I remember once I was in a coffee bean with her. She's still pre-verbal and in her stroller. And this lady, you know, very, you know, whatever, nice white lady comes over and then she says, so what country is she from? And I said, Watts. And she said, oh, I thought she was African. I was like, yeah, I wonder why you would think that. You know, that kind of thing, like all this, like, she, you know, people do kind of automatically assume that we adopted her from another country.
Right.
Because it's obvious from the drop that she must be adopted if we're both there.
Right.
So,
it's, I like how you said it, the other part, it is very other. And that's only going to continue going on, obviously. And she's aware of it, you know, too, but it is very strange if, you know, we're walking down the street and she gets ahead of me or behind me, I will sometimes see people looking around to see who's with this child. Is someone watching her, you know, in a protective way, but for the most part, but it's, you know, it's just, that's an oddity too. It's like, oh, and so I often just very purposely, am just very close to her anyway and vigilant, obviously, but That's a little odd. And especially like we changed schools during COVID too, because we did a physical move. And even just going to school the first dozen times, you know, you're meeting new faces, like, oh, or even kids, it's like, you're Serena's mom?
Yeah.
You're just like, yeah. I am.
And
we're very open about really everything.
Right.
Just because it's necessary, we feel like.
Right. And how does she have feelings about it? Has she expressed anything about it, or?
She thinks the whole stereotype of a Karen is hilarious and really likes to address it with us and about white people who behave that way. And so, 'cause she finds it very humorous. Occasionally she'll be, I don't know, you know, when George Floyd, when the George Floyd situation went down, And yeah. and that coincided with our move too. And everything, yeah. you find yourself having to address these subjects from just an informed outsider as best you can to your child who is going to, you know, is getting this at the same time. And around the same time, you know, Kamala Harris becomes vice president. So mm-hmm. that's also a big thing for our girl and being able to buttress that. And the mixed signals she gets from media, from other people about our differences, both visually and culturally, she finds interesting and often very funny, and has lots of questions that I vainly try to answer, and Amy probably does a much better job.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been able to? Are there any ways that you can support her? And I ask this as a parent myself, like all the time, support her in having friends of all different races or like, you know, especially obviously African-American. Like for me, it was really important to bring him to a black barbershop. Like right. He's got to go to a black barbershop.
One of the things Z likes to point out is I'm the one who usually does her hair. And takes care of it on mostly a daily basis, and so she, you know, she likes to point out, your hair is nothing like mine. You don't understand how this feels. And I'm like, I'm sorry,
right?
When it is time for her to go to the hairdresser, we obviously always make sure it's a black hairdresser or black hair shop. And you know, we moved to a place that is a bit whiter than where we lived in Los Angeles, so you know, there's. Sometimes I'm the obnoxious adopted parent where when I see another African-American child, I'm like, don't you want to go? Look, there's a friend right over there. And
yeah, I think keeping her in touch with her culture is critical. Mm-hmm. And so any events that we have, we're not that, you know, we're about 70 miles from LA now. And so mm-hmm. it's not a huge jaunt. And we go back and visit our friends pretty regularly. But the diversity is huge, and just really talking about our differences is a lot of the way that we do it on our daily basis. Mm-hmm. And then honestly, I think just answering everything, even if it's a hard question, mm-hmm. in the same way that I would answer it if it was Tiger asking me, mm-hmm. maybe with a little less swearing. But
did I swear? But
very authentically.
Yeah.
And just so she knows she's going to get the truth if she's asking us something. And and if we don't know, then, you know, we figure it out together. But that was a big part of our philosophy when we were adopting and our commitment. And it was a big part of the training, too, is that the odds of you getting a child that is of a different race than yourself matters. Mm-hmm. And having those conversations actually with your extended family. Like I knew my immediate family mm-hmm. would be like all on board.
Right.
But you know, everybody's got that uncle, you know, or there's somebody out there that you're like, you know, the racist might have a problem with this one.
Yeah.
And just making the boundaries. So
that's how did you handle that? Like here, did you handle it directly or did you just like, okay, we'll wait and see if something comes up and then we'll say something or.
I think it's more that person wasn't much in our lives anyway.
Okay.
And so it was easy to continue that distancing, mm-hmm. except for like a very big family reunion. And then I was just glued to her if he was around, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and correcting and seeing her, I think Tiger's beautiful at this, but if somebody misspeaks or, you know, even says something in kind of the wrong way, he'll do a very polite call out. You know, just so she knows to stand up and protect herself too.
Yeah.
That was kind of vague, but.
I mean, this stuff, it's not like easy to talk about, but I think it's really important, especially like as adoptive parents, just making sure that you're aware of like what you're taking on. And I have a very good, one of my best friends is black. And she said to me like, honey, you're adopting a black boy. Like, you know what this means, right? She's like, you, this is a really big responsibility. And she's like, and I'm going to be in your life for that little boy, like no matter what, and you better keep me around. And like, you know, God bless her, my friend Robin. But yeah, it's just, it's something that needs to be talked about more. And I do agree that they did discuss this in training, and that's a great thing. Yeah.
My favorite thing would always be if I had Serena with me at like a Target or something, and I'm in the textured hair section. I must've just been a magnet for nice women wanting to come up to me and help me with this situation in the textured hair section. They take one look at me and go, "Oh, poor dear. Come here.
Let me
help
you.
This over here. You need to help."
The other thing I'll just say, and then I want to get back to like the story part of it for you guys, is that my eyes have been opened to tokenism in a way that I kind of knew about before. Of course I knew about it, but I didn't really, and I'll just be completely honest, like I didn't really understand how little representation there is, for instance, in just media. I mean, I used to think like, oh, like this show is diverse and this is great. Like even with my daughter, who's half Filipina, I would be like, oh, this is a good diverse show. And, you know, now like with my son, just something, I'm just like, there's one Black person on this. Like, that's not okay. It's interesting the levels that awaken.
I mean, considered myself, you know, fairly woke. And seeing the world through the eyes of my daughter, and just, you know, even the stuff about the Little Mermaid, her eyes, I mean, she's not even a really big, huge Little Mermaid fan, but she, you know, just when she saw the trailer, her eyes just kind of gleamed up, and she kind of turns to me and smiles at me, and I'm like, I know, yep. Yay.
It's
and just
awesome.
That, and Kamala Harris and the type of, and getting that representation, you know, now I see, you know, I guess now I see it as the only thing I can say other than I'd been told it all my life, and it, you know, it took me that long to figure it out because of my daughter.
Totally.
So it's
because when it becomes personal, it's such a different experience than just, you know, thinking about it cerebrally, you know?
I kind of want to add, I agree with everything you guys are saying, but it's like, I also just had a really interesting experience where I was just, I also always felt like I was a pretty open-minded person, but just so shocked by the depth of my real privilege and the perception of that I actually found like I was just kind of more just shutting up and just listening, which is not my typical personality at all.
Right.
And just learning, but also just so fearful of offending, you know?
Totally. Yeah, I know. I hate to admit that too. And I feel that way. And I'm trying to like, just get over it. Get over it.
Yeah, move through it for sure. Yeah.
We've been involved in a school that our school district has adopted a diversity in education initiative. And And while our district is a blue district for the most part, it used to be Daryl Issa's district. So there's still this this contingent, and so a very let's just say evangelical church sent out a bunch of minions to this listen and learn sessions that they were having, sending like 300 people out to sit at the tables. And say, and almost to a T, every single one of them sat there and said, "There's no more racism in America." And
and not wanting to talk about gender. I mean,
they wanted to talk about trans issues, which had nothing to do with the diversity initiative at hand. Mm-hmm. And Amy can speak better to it because she was there and I wasn't. But you know, in the conversation in my mind, I am like, of course you think that because you are white and you have never experienced it.
That's right.
Discrimination based on your skin color. So therefore you have not as woke as I am, I'm in my 40s, do I get to actually feel it and see it and understand it from even, and I'm still, you know, one removed from it. So it's not,
for sure.
I'm not trying to claim that.
Right.
But when people say things like that, I can't sit still anymore. I can't,
right.
I can't, because it's, that's actually the most racist thing you could possibly say.
Yeah. And honestly, Tiger, that's one of your best traits, is you are such a loud ally, that it serves well.
Being willing to open your mouth, even if you make a mistake, you know? And on that note, have you guys heard of there's a transracial adoption camp? Our agency, Extraordinary Families, told us about it. We weren't able to do it this year because we're moving. But next year, we really want to do it. And it's for the whole family. And it's just for 1 week solid. It's all transracial adoption families. And they just do workshops and talk through things. And the kids do their own track. And then the parents do their own track. And, you know, obviously, the kids get to meet other kids who have, you know, parents
mixed
of different
families.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll link to that in the show notes as well, because I think that just sounds incredible. It sounds like a great opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. That sounds great.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. 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 So getting back to the story of you guys, so you bring her home, she's one, you're adjusting. Did you have visits with any of the biological family? What was that like?
Yeah, after we were with Z for about two, after Z was with in our home for about 2 weeks, we started 1 hour visitations with the birth mother every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And that was pretty much the cadence that we were led to think it was going to happen. Our purpose in fostering was foster to adopt.
Right.
But especially through the county, there's no promises, you know?
That's right. That's
parental right termination was the next court date. It had been set for the next court date. So that was the track we were on.
Right. So the listeners, just so they understand. So every case is a foster case until it's an adoption case.
Right.
And it's not an adoption case until the parental rights have been terminated. So when you came in, the next step was already going to be TPR.
She came to us in late April, and mid-June was the next court date, and TPR, termination of parental rights, was on the docket for that.
Okay. Okay. And so how did that play out? But they were still doing visits. Did they want... They weren't confident in the woman's ability to.
Right. There had been a prior child had been removed and
was in the system already.
Right. Okay. Much of what we knew nothing about. It's not our story. And,
right.
So services had not been, given to the bio mom, and this is the track it was on. A family member that had been offered Z at the time and passed came back once they learned adoption was going to happen.
Oh.
And that's what derailed the parental rights termination for about 2 years.
Okay, so she had already been with another foster family.
Yeah, but it was an illegal placement, illegal from the system, the system's term, not ours.
So why they were trying to.
It was an auntie.
Okay.
And so a elderly family friend. And Zarina definitely was very, very loved her first year. Mm-hmm. I mean, her buoyancy is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But she lived in a home with a very kind lady. We met her a few times who had basically, she was either in. I can't remember what the wheelie thing's called. What's that bumper? Like you put a kid in.
Okay.
She's either in that or in a crib or in a high chair or in a car seat, but she was never left to like move on her own.
Mm-hmm.
So we, there were some concerns on mobility, but mentally and her spirituality were just very vibrant.
Okay. Okay. And but it was illegal in the sense that she wasn't certified to be a foster family.
Again, we're not entirely sure what the why they had to remove her quickly.
I see. Okay.
From her first placement, but it happened.
No, I remember, Ty.
Oh, they told okay.
She was not a certified foster parent,
uh-huh.
And so she was taking care of the child, and it sounds like she was starting to the process, but not really. that had been, Zarina had been living in her home, you know, ever since, you know, ever since the onset.
Gotcha. And so then, so you start visits, TPR happens, and then the aunt comes back and says, wait a minute, I want...
TPR didn't
happen.
Is
that how... TPR didn't happen
at that time. That time it didn't happen. It got delayed.
That's what you said. Yep. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was really the twist in the story is once the biological aunt came into the picture, that immediately became the focus of DCFS as the right place for her to go, you know, for Z to go. There's already a half sibling in there. She's a well-known, you know, foster parent. It was a no-brainer, but it basically went from the start of the story to us having a 99% chance of adopting Z to within a year and a half, it being 99% chance that we were going to lose her. Oh, so it was just a very, just from our very small perspective in this whole story, it was really pretty traumatic and sad. Mm-hmm. And our philosophy, I was so proud of, which was we wanted Zarina to know any biological family members. Yep. And we really wanted her to have relationships with them. And so we all the way through to the end had extended hands and to the family. And once DCF kind of shifted their focus onto the aunt, it was clear to us that there were a couple other weird things going on in the home that were inconsistent with what we knew the state knew. Mm-hmm. And Tiger, why don't you take over a little bit at this point?
There were some things being reported back to us by Z, and we reported them to DCFS.
Okay,
and so that started getting.
Do you mean like things that were physically harming her, or just
no?
Don't have to be specific.
No, it's just things that
by another person in the home,
by other people that wasn't supposed to be in the home.
And
that person apparently having disciplinary control and
there was a physical. There were a couple physicals.
Yeah, was. So we poured those things back, and then when it came down to DCFS wanting to remove Z to place with the bio aunt, then we were able to convene a hearing at DCFS, and eventually we had the hearing and much agonizing later, mm-hmm. agonizing like a month, 2 months later almost, we finally got word that DCFS. Had changed and was not going to place Z with the aunt anymore, and the adoption process would begin again. And
how did that happen?
I know you just flew by a critical plot point.
I'm just being vague.
I know you're fine. It's just like I want a homage here. We got to a point where we felt that Z was not being served. And believe me, there was a lot of thought too on, are we the right choice? You know, she's sitting here now, and you know, the aunt owned a home and she seemed to have her stuff together, but it was the misrepresentation and the lies of what we knew was going on in the home mm-hmm. to what was actually being shared that just mm-hmm. immediately were like,
it was being delayed instead of just,
there's no reason for being
3 day notice right away.
Gotcha. There were red flags and
there's no reason for dishonesty. So we ended up getting a lawyer, and the lawyer was simply because we were just at a loss of like, we didn't go through, you know, and have representation or allies on our side. And back to the motto of DCFS, reunification with family, right? Yeah. Of which we were not, even though she had now been in our home longer than she'd ever been anywhere, right? We found a lawyer who was just fantastic, Beatrice Fung and FUNG, and she's based out of LA, and she partnered with us, and just was really, so compassionate, and also we're pretty practical people. And so there are a lot of things like, we know this person's living in the house because he's caring for the daughter for Z. And what's, you know, why are we hiding this? And she just was able to educate us on, this is very likely going to happen.
Uh-huh.
You're going to get a notice saying that the removal of the child from our home, and we'll get like a 5-day notice. We did get that, and Tiger was actually out on an acting gig out of the country when it came.
Wow.
And B just said, all right. And she's like, she just has a very unique mind. And she then told me that she's like, this is the best thing that could have happened to us, because now what it's done is it put the onus on the state to now prove why we were not the best place instead of where they were before, which is, this is the best place. They kind of took their own power away.
Huh.
So we filed a grievance. Mm-hmm. She did. We signed everything.
Mm-hmm.
She filed a grievance and basically got the whole thing audited. And we went through that process, which was also surreal. And they just listened to everything. And this, you know, the social workers were there and the aunt was there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the room and they just listened to all of it. And with love and compassion, B just blew them out of the water.
Wow.
And that's when everything shifted, and very quickly, I think within 3 months, our adoption was finalized.
Wow. And
it was insane.
Z had remained with you the entire time. Like, she wasn't removed, or
was
she
removed? No.
Okay.
Yes and no. At the end, the last three to four months with her, the aunt had 56-hour visitations. So Z would leave our home at noon on Fridays, and we would get her back late afternoon on Sundays.
Wow.
And it was crazy. Like, just the things that go through your mind too, of like, you know, I wanted to almost like have a tracker on her just to know she was okay. Cause you don't know where she is or what she's doing. And you just have to, you know, either rely on faith or just, you know, block it out until your kid's back home again. She, for the most part, was very loved. But I look back on that and just how confusing that must have been for her.
Yeah.
I mean, just the culture shock alone, you know?
Yeah.
And, but
yeah,
it built her resilience, and she's just beautiful. So.
Absolutely. So it was finalized within 3 months after that, which is incredible.
The adoption was a year later. The adoption papers were a year later. But it was about 3 months when the court finally when we went back to court after the hearing, and the judge granted parental rights, terminated parental rights. Sorry.
Got it. And then,
thank you, Tiger.
Yeah.
Then there's no more visitations required.
Correct.
Did you stay in touch with the family, the biological family, or no?
We didn't, but I want to speak to that because that was really tough for us, because that's the exact opposite of what we went in as and what we were building.
Mm-hmm.
And where we landed was we were just so mad at the end of just all the lies too. And you know, she was smart and just trying to do what she thought was best at worst, maybe not. But where we landed was, we are not going to do outreach, but if anybody reaches out to us wanting to connect with her, we will absolutely always be open to revisiting and discussing that together to then decide what's best for Z.
Okay.
And it's been how many years now? Five years, and nobody's called.
Eight years. Oh, well.
Okay.
6 years. Sorry, 6 years since the adoption was finalized. Since.
Hey, Tiger, do some math for me. Just kidding. He's really bad at
that. That makes two of us.
Yeah, it's been a while. And we We do have the birth mother and I for some time had been emailing in the early part. Mm-hmm. And so we, as far as I know, that's still a valid way to approach.
Do you ever feel compelled to reach out to them or not really? You do.
I do.
And
to the birth mom.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes to the aunt too, because of the half brother, right? That's an ache.
And the half brother is, did he remain in the biological family?
Yes.
Okay.
As far as we know.
Okay. And how old, what's the age difference between the two kids?
5 years older.
Okay. And so you feel that, you do feel that it's on your heart sometimes to reestablish connection. However, you haven't yet. Are you willing to speak to that?
I feel, and Tiger, we haven't spoken about this recently. Mm-hmm. It's probably been a year or so since we've talked about this, but for me, it's a, I think it's wrong. I think that what is happening now is wrong, but there has been a lot of change in Z's life and also just some diagnoses that she's just got a lot going on.
Yep.
That adding that element to it. And honestly, even opening our door to the aunt, because last we knew that's the house that he was in, is not exciting. It isn't a great idea, but I feel like it's something I want to explore in the next year or two for sure.
Yeah.
If Tiger and I are aligned.
And how do you feel about it, Tiger?
During the adoption process, the court, I can't remember if it was an order or a suggestion, said to I don't remember the name of the organization. It was called a consortium something.
Yeah, the consortium.
Yeah,
it's like a mediator,
right? A mediator for post-adoption families.
Okay,
for both the adopted and this was, I think, probably before our hearing. We met with them, and then I believe the aunt did meet with them as well. Mm-hmm. And then it came time to do another second round of mediation or whatever. And we were there, and the aunt didn't come through and said she didn't want to The idea being, whichever way the adoption went, if it went, if in fact we were not able to adopt her, and she did go for guardianship with the aunt, that there might be some way of including us as in that post scenario, because we have been with Z over a year at this point. Z was was part of our family, and we loved her, want to be somehow in there if it didn't work out. And the aunt was the one who did cut that off, saying that she didn't want us to have contact post adoption, and didn't think that we were going to be able to adopt her. And
she didn't think we had a chance.
And so broke off. So I feel like the opportunity was there to kind of at least build some kind of framework there, because there was some contention and some issues, and
right.
So my feeling is that had been rejected. Now I agree with Amy in that I think contact under the right kind of circumstances would be healthy for our child, particularly with mm-hmm. with her half brother and her biological mother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do think that I need some buy-in from Zarina beforehand.
That was the other thing.
Is her desire to have this happen, because she doesn't show a lot of desire for that at this point in her life. I assume that will change. I know that will change.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Ty, that reminded me, that's kind of where we were. Either the bio family is coming back and asking, or Z is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's when we would reflect.
Gotcha. Yeah. How long did it take you to recover from all of that? And did it change you in some way? Did it change your relationship? Did it affect your relationship? What about that?
I'll let you know when I'm over it.
Okay.
That's so funny, Tiger, because I'm the same. Like, I think it's a hard PTSD.
Yes.
I still, like, I just have to reason with myself on a pretty regular basis of, you're not going to lose her, mm-hmm. you know? And my sister, who had two children vaginally, said that's a very common feeling. Like, she was always anxious about predators of mm-hmm. some kind. Mm-hmm. And so to that, you know, it feels like, you know, regular motherhood, but, you know, I think that's a big concern. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how it affected our relationship. I think that I am so proud of, I think we've always had a great respect and enjoyment of each other. And I think that how we navigated this as a team was just freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of that. And there's not many spaces you can really talk about that without sounding like a jerk.
But right.
It just, we just had a, we were in lockstep every step of the way and would talk to each other at every step of the way. And that's something that, you know, good or bad, we weren't doing in the rest of our marriage. And so
right.
we actually are legally divorced now, mm-hmm. but we built, also beautifully, I think, a really amazing way of co-parenting mm-hmm. where we're bird nesting. Mm-hmm. And neither one of us wanted to lose a freaking minute with her, right?
Can you say what that, because I wasn't aware until I talked to Tiger on the phone previous to this recording. I didn't know, I hadn't heard that term.
Yeah. So bird nesting was something that kind of came around in the 70s. So add a little hippie flavor to it. But it's the child stays in a home and you and your co-parent go in and out of that home. Mm-hmm. So Z is always with her dog and her two cats and her toys. And there's never any like, oh, shoot, I left this at my dad's house.
Or, right.
Oh, my mom has this. And people will do it differently. Some couples will rent an apartment and then they'll share that.
Okay.
I'm in the off time, but the way Tiger and I are doing it is he has an apartment that's about 10 minutes away from the house that Zarina lives in every day. And I'm with her in that house 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. And then I leave on Wednesday mornings mm-hmm. and he comes in and stays for 2 days. And then I come back Friday afternoons or after work or more, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm with her then until that next time. But Tiger's also over every weekday morning around 6:30 to see her, to get her ready for school mm-hmm. and to take her to school.
Wow.
And then on weekends, there's flexibility. Like if, mm-hmm. I mean, usually that's my time. But I think what makes this work is we don't look at it like that. Like we're not jerks about it.
Right.
If he wants to go see a concert on a Wednesday or Thursday night when normally he would have Z, we both just try to support each other in our outside life too.
Sure.
Also, summer starts next week. So I'm basically daytime daddy through the week.
And Tiger's in a new relationship with somebody that's awesome. And Zarina's met her. Mm-hmm. When we got divorced, we had some rules about, just from books that we had read that, you know, a new person shouldn't be introduced until about a year, but, mm-hmm. Z kind of discovered it and we just made a uniform choice that let's not lie.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're just very upfront with it. So it's working, I think, really well for us.
That's incredible. I just want to say, like, I just love hearing this, that you're both adults, you're grownups, you're putting your own stuff aside for your child, and you're making it as, obviously it's going to be a disruption and a disturbance no matter what, but you're just trying to make that as gentle and easy as possible. And I just think that's really cool. So congratulations to you two on that. And I hope it keeps working that way.
I think it's helping our relationship. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't want to speak for you on that one, Tiger, but I think it's, we have a lot of warm feelings for each other. There are not marriage material feelings, mm-hmm. but that are just helping the friendship and the care for each other.
Yeah. So this experience, this didn't, because sometimes people say, oh, it was such a hard experience that like our relationship couldn't like withstand it. But for you guys, it really wasn't this experience of the fostering to adopt that had the impact. It was just that you were growing apart in other ways.
Yeah.
But as parents, you guys are super aligned. And am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually when it comes to our child, there's no division. There's no, we're rarely at loggerheads concerning her.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple issues, but it's not.
Right.
So of course, yeah, my relationship with Amy is, you know, she's the mother of my child, you know, I got nothing but, you know, trust and respect and love for that. So
that's beautiful.
It's, you know, that's one of a lot of reasons why I can kind of work out well.
I know you have to go, Tiger. I want to ask you one quick question just about your situation now. So you're dating someone, and we don't have to go into her story, but I just want to point out, it's just really interesting. That. She's fostering to adopt, and she was doing that when you met her, right? Is that correct?
Adopted. No, she's got 2 13.
Oh, already adopted.
Adopted. She adopted before we did.
Okay.
It was very strange because we met and no discussion of adoption or anything prior to it. We just met, we're talking, doing whatever. And then both her boys are the same age. And I said, oh, are they twins? You know? And she goes, no, I foster to adopt it. My 2 boys. And I was like, what?
I love it. That's so cool.
Yeah.
It was very funny. He came back and he's like, Amy, it's like, it was so serendipitous. I feel like it's kismet. All right. That's great.
I don't say things like that.
You actually really did. But I did not encourage you. So.
Well, listen, I want to let Tiger, certainly, I know you have to go pick up your daughter. You guys are awesome. I love the way you're navigating this next step of your relationship together and doing it with the utmost regard for your child, which a lot of people forget about or try to do, but don't do a great job at. And it seems like you guys are just killing it. I'm so happy that you came on and shared your story with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much
for the opportunity. And I highly encourage people to foster to adopt. There's such a need.
Even as hard as it was, would you do it again?
Absolutely. We all grew as people, you know, the good or the bad.
Yeah.
And it's just absolutely would. I mean, Z's very much our child. And yeah, I would again in a heartbeat.
Amazing. All right, you guys. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel.
This has been the Foster to Forever podcast. Happy stories of non-traditional families born through foster to adopt. Produced by Aquarius Rising. Edited by Jason Cerubi at Split Rock Studios. Original music composed by Joe Fulginetti. For more information or to stay in touch, visit fromfostertoforever.com. That's from foster, the number 2, forever.com. And stay connected with us on Instagram at foster2foreverpodcast. That's foster, the number 2, forever podcast. We'll see you next time.